automate more, relax more, get paid with less effort than ever. Coming soon, D72. Make sure to visit foolishit.com for updates. Podnuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 107. Tonight we're a couple days late, but we're here. You know, work got in the way, but you know, we're back. We're back. I don't want to miss a show. I enjoy hanging out with these guys, and we'll do everything we can to get things up. But if you're listening to us after the fact, that's same old, same old. It's still another Geeksters fiscal week for you guys. If you're in the chat room with us, thanks for coming out tonight. A couple days late, but it's been just a crazy week for me, and it was definitely me that we had to postpone. So I want to thank Mitch and Tim for helping me and being there for me and being flexible for my schedule.
I don't really know what day it is anyway, most of the time. So
I thought it was Tuesday.
You just tell me to sit down in the chair. I'm happy. I'm good. I wouldn't say flexible as much as just really confused.
Well, thank you guys for being able to move your schedules around for my schedules. And I'll tell you why I moved around, but I'm going to see what you guys have been up to first. So Tim, how's it going tonight?
Oh, I'm extremely gruntled.
Oh, kicking it old school.
That's it. I'm gruntled. Enjoy an extra long fiscal week here. And it's all right. It's good. You know what? It's warmed up a little bit here. I finally had this deep freeze. It actually rained like last night. It was crazy. And so we had a day a couple days ago. It was like the sun came out and it was blue skies, not a cloud. And I think here in Pittsburgh, we probably get maybe 10 of those a year. I'm guessing. It's very, very few. And so when you get one, you really appreciate it. Doesn't matter what time of year it is. But this time of year, it's a special thing. And I got the Daytona 500 coming up on Sunday. So that to me is like, if I can make it through football season, through those couple weeks after the Super Bowl, and I see the Daytona 500, I know I'm almost there. So pretty fired up
it's
about
it. It's all downhill.
That.
All downhill from there, huh?
Or mostly in circles, but yeah, there's some downhill.
Yeah, I guess there is. I wonder how those guys don't get dizzy. I mean, I get dizzy when I have to turn the corner too many times and coming up my staircase.
Wow. I don't know. It's probably one of those things that, like, it's probably best if nobody asked them that, because then if they thought about it, then it would become a problem.
That's right. I don't know. We'll have to find out. Hey, Mitch, how's it going tonight?
Well, I'm here, and I'm glad of that. It's going pretty good. It's warm here, too. It's like it got near 50, if not 50. Still got a lot of snow out there, but slowly going away. But it's supposed to get a little bit cool again next week. But you figure in, what's today? What, you got a month and a day? It's spring, so a month from now, from tomorrow, right?
Maybe I'll be gone by then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. You can make a spring angel.
Well, I'm not making anything. I won't be able to get up if I do that. To get a crane to get my butt up.
The permanent Mitch snow angel, folks.
You know, I have trouble putting my shoes on.
There's a fine line between snow angel and just what you leave in the snow when you're like on your back like a bug and you can't flip over.
It won't be a snow angel, more like a sinkhole if I do it.
Just let the snow melt around me. Come get me in the spring.
Yeah. And I got busy. I got a job. I'm working on a new hard drive install it's an old AMD compact HP with both names on it. AMD Sepron.
Wow.
If you remember the Sepron processors, 940.
Yeah.
2 gigs of RAM, Windows 7, 64-bit. So it's going good.
So is that somebody's old computer and they want to go ahead and move away from Windows XP or?
No, it was bought with that, with Windows 7. And his hard drive went up and I had remoted into it, run a couple of tests and it said, if you want any data, back it up, and which he didn't want anything, but I'll back up some of his pictures. So, I mean, it's got the, a lot of those HPs have built into the BIOS and with the smart thing, it'll tell you. Imminent danger. Replace hard drive immediately or something like that. So
right, it's the smart technology. System monitoring and something tool. Mm-hmm. System monitoring and something. Yeah, it's the same. If you guys ever run Spinrite, that's the same thing that kicks on. It's built into Spinrite as well.
Right.
I think and it's not a proprietary like Steve Gibson product. It's out there. And so I think it's on, I would guess that it's probably on the other CD. What's the other CD tool that I hear a lot about. Crystal Disk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would guess that it's in there too, because like you said, it's an old, it's just a basic.
Yeah, I use that and then C tools, and it failed everything.
I like Crystal Disk Info.
Yeah, I like it too. I use it too.
I don't know how old it is or whatever. I actually have it that runs as a portable app, but I found that one of the best features of that. Well, first of all, it's very quick. It's easy. You run it, and you get smart info right in front of you that you can review. I mean, of course, it does give you like red light, green light kind of information, but you can look at the numbers. But one of the best things I found about that, especially when it's a portable app, is that it stores a log. And so if you were to run Crystal Disk on the same drive like a year later, it'll actually build on that log file, and you can go back, review that log file. And of course, the most valuable thing in my mind about smart information isn't so much the actual data itself. You can have two brand new identical hard drives and have somewhat varying smart info. You know, as long as it's all kind of in range, it's good. But it's what the smart it's what you get over time. And so if you can actually see degradation, that's different than if you have some numbers that may not look so good, but they're the same over time. And I discovered that if I get a customer's computer in, I haven't had it in for a year or two, and I run that Crystal Disk, I can kind of look back through time and say, oh, okay, wow, this thing actually is suffering some degradation. So,
which is normal.
Yeah. However, if you're having, I'm trying to, like, if there's, if you have a handful of, I draw a blank all of a sudden, but the sectors that have been reallocated, right. You know, if that number seems a little high, like in your own mind, you can go back and you say, well, a year ago, that number was the same. It's like, well, okay. That's just the nature of this drive. It probably came from the factory with a certain issue that was resolved early on. But if it seems a little high, you look back and this is a new event that these have been reallocated over the last year. You can actually see where, hey, there's something going on with this drive. You may not actually be in the yellow range or red range yet, right. But you can actually see where, hey, there's something going on here. Maybe it's something to take a look at.
Yeah, I'll have to mess with it. Like I said, I've seen it. I've played with it very, very little. So I don't have the, I definitely couldn't tell you much more about it.
Spinnerbright is your tool of choice.
It is, yeah. And I use Spinrite. Yeah. And, I hear a lot of people, and it just, it's what I have. It's what I bought. I use it. So,
the Crystal Disk is kind of like the first, that's the first, that just, you very quickly run it, and it just gives you a snapshot. Okay, this is what you have. You
could, sure.
Instead of, that's a problem with smart information. Of course, the end user shouldn't have to know too much. And I suppose that the smart data is good because most times the way it's presented is, hey, you got a problem. It's usually too late or whatever, but it's not a lot of cryptic information that the user can't process. But the Crystal Disk, it's a good starting point. If I feel like maybe there's something going on there, that's where I'll start. Just say, hey, let's take a look at where this is. It's not a tool to really recondition the drive or do anything to it. It's just a very quick and easy reporting tool that you can run and see what you have.
Got it.
It's Crystal Disk Info. That's what it is. So it's just info.
Got it. Yeah, and if you're listening in the notes, I'll have the links to the main site. And Tim, you also mentioned the portable site from portableapps.com. There'll be a link in there, so you can download it, throw it on a thumb drive. And I carry around a little case that for thumb drives, and that's one of the I'll probably throw that on a thumb drive and toss that in there and just keep it. And I probably even will go ahead and put Crystal Disk on my Pixie Boot server. So when I bring a system home, that's usually what I do, is I just, instead of trying to pull out my CDs or something like that, I just boot them up and pull them right from the virtual, my Pixie Boot server then has all the ISOs and it just loads them right from there.
CTools is a good one too. They have a boot up ISO. So I'll use that, and a lot of machines will have a built-in utility too in their BIOS, especially the HP machines. You can run that. Then they all fail. Let's get a new hard drive.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, what caused the delay for me was, that's why we're a little late, is that I was given on, so we normally record on Tuesday mornings, 9 a.m. Tuesday morning, I got a call telling me that a new printer is going to be installed. Now, this isn't just a new printer. This is the new all-in-one copy, scanner, faxer, main, you know, leased mega printer that that one of my clients uses. And they were going to show up that afternoon. So that's why I moved us back a little bit. And so I got there. They were going to be there about 3. I got there about 2:30 to get things done because, you know, we had to do things like, you know, reservations and get the drivers put up on the print server and, you know, change my login script so that the users got the printer. And they got stuck in traffic and they weren't sure when they were going to be there. And it kind of got pushed back. About 5:05, they called and said, "We can't make it today."
Nice. So, thanks.
I know. Yeah. So I came home and they said they'll be there. And so the next day was my day that I'm normally scheduled to be there. So we said, okay, how about 8:15? They said, sounds good. We'll see you there. So I get there at 7:30 because I'm scheduled there. Get there 8:15 rolls around. Okay, maybe they're running a little late. 8:30 rolls around. Okay. 8:45 rolls around. Give them a call. Oh, we were told we could show up anytime after 8:45. It's 10 o'clock and we're getting the thing loaded on the truck right now. Okay. So then they show up and then they're looking around, and this is a school that just has lots of stairs. There's no, they're grandfathered in. They are working on getting their like ADA stuff, but there's no ramps. There's no lift. There's nothing. There's lots of stairs to get up. And they show up and they said, oh, our notes say that there's no stairs. I mean, so here's this ginormous all-in-one that probably weighs, what, 500 or 600 pounds, and there's two guys.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that's not going to work. They're like, well, we can come back in like an hour and a half.
Where's the elevator?
Yeah, there is no elevator. You know, they're like, we were told there was a lift. I've been here a year, and I don't know if there's a lift, because I'd be like, but so they're like, they said, well, we can come back in an hour and a half. I'm like, well, I have other clients I got to get to, so how does tomorrow work? Tomorrow works great, which is today. I get there about 10:30. They're there. Awesome. Everything works out. But man, oh man, it just kept getting, you know, pushback. You know, I dealt with 3 different techs because one tech would be on site. They wouldn't show up the next day. The new tech would be on site. You know, they wouldn't show up. So man, it was just it was a comedy of errors. I think everybody's really tired because everybody's just been waiting for this thing to work, and it's up and running now, but there's still some more configurations. But that's why we had to push it back, was just waiting on a printer to be installed.
It's one of them cluster blanks.
Oh, I mean, not even, I mean, it, to the point of the network techs, because you have your delivery guys and you have the network guys who come out and help do the install. And then another person comes out and like does some training. The network guy was like, I have clients I got to get to myself.
I don't know, boss. I'm stupid.
Yeah. So he was like, oh, man. But
was this replacing a similar but older type machine, or is this like brand new to the office and they have a lot of stuff to learn about it?
No, it was replacing an old Ricoh to a new Konica Minolta.
Okay. That's what we have.
It can be problematic in an office where they've just had this beat up old inkjet, and they're getting this like 600 pound blowout machine with a million features, and you know they love it and they want to be able to use it. But those things, it's amazing the features that come with a lot of these machines now, and it could be an issue kind of getting some of these users up to speed on how to do all these things. And of course, you said they have a man that comes out and kind of trains them a little bit, but as their tech support, you have to be up to speed on some of these, because if they have a quick question here or there, I mean, you want to be able to field it, but you probably will be fielding some questions. So you do have to kind of know the ins and outs of these things, and it can be a little intimidating at first. So,
yeah. I mean, you know, they do things like locked print, which I had never really thought about doing. So somebody's making a copy. What usually will happen is Tim, you're making a photocopies and I go to print something, it's going to wait till your photocopies are done before I print. It won't just print in the middle of your photocopies.
Okay, sure.
But if you're not aware, you may go do something, you may come back, oh, there's my stack of photocopies, and grab everything, including my print job.
Oh, I see.
So what they do is they have a lock print. So while you're photocopying, I go to print, and it asks for a code. So then I put my code in, and then it stays. Now, until I go to the machine and put in my code, it won't print. Huh. Okay. So it's kind of cool, but you have to set that up on the server side, so that way everybody gets it. And you know, this wasn't just I think they were thinking this was just a quick trade it out, swap it, good to go.
Yeah.
And it required, you know, it had more attention to do with the network. on the network side. So it all went really well.
Hmm. Is that all job by job basis? So if I was printing things, I could only have certain jobs that required me to unlock the print when I got.
That's them? Every job.
Okay. Well, I mean, that sounds great if you're the boss and you don't want everybody walking away with your stuff. But that's no good if you may have one or two documents that you're willing to stand there and wait for, but if you have a couple hundred pages, you're not going to want to stand there.
I see what you're saying. Oh, in the queue, I don't know. I see what you're saying. I wouldn't assume that you do not have to put in the passcode for document. Like, you print job one, you print job two, you print job three, and you go to pick them all up. Is it going to ask you for the password three times? I doubt it. I think you can put in the password once and it'll spit out all three jobs.
So this password happens on the, it's printed from the computer itself?
Right. Yeah, it's set on the machine. And then when you go to print on your computer, a box pops up with your username and password. And then you put in your password. It's the same password. It's the same password they would use for maybe keeping track of how many copies are made for, such and such.
See, ours is a ConocoPhizHub 423. It just came to me. So if it does have that feature, but we're not using it.
Yeah, this is a BizHub 745.
Oh, probably a lot newer.
Yeah.
But it's still cool. We have, you can, scan something, have an email to yourself or whoever and stuff like that, and a PDF file.
Right.
But I don't need all those features. I don't do that. I just print something. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I was late, a little bit late for that.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Anything exciting happening with you, Tim?
Yeah, you know what? I would say that one of the more interesting things I've had come in here. But this is a customer I've had before, and we've dealt with this issue before. And actually, this is the second time I've worked on this machine in the last couple of years. And I've actually never touched it. I had her install the remote desktop software the first time around, and I'm remoting into it again. And as long as I can do it that way, it suits me. And she loves it. So, but this has, I think this is so unfortunate, but this is an Acer laptop and they built that machine the way you would build your own machine. Their hard drive it's a good size hard drive, but it's partitioned into an OS, partition and a data partition, which as techs, most of us probably do that because it makes the reinstall so nice, so easy. Unfortunately, it's kind of like nobody in the industry has actually acknowledged that this is something that should be done and gone along with the program. And it's further exacerbated by these companies that store things in really wrong places, at least in my mind. And so, it's Vista, runs fine for her. She loves it. C partition is, I can't remember, 50 gigs, and then the data is 180 or whatever it is. I don't know. And so what I did is last time around I just moved her documents folder from the C drive to the D drive, and of course that cleared up a ton of space, perfectly adequate. And she calls again saying, actually complaining of different symptoms, but it was all from the same thing. It was just where the C drive was filled up again. It had 2 gigs free. All right, so we're getting in there. When I'm looking, and I can't find, there's no data, really. I mean, there's no user generator to save data in the C drive, but it's everything Google, stored in the app, the apps data folder. There was, apparently they have an iPhone, which they're the worst. And so iTunes, of course, iTunes had backed it up, which is great. Backed it up before an update, but I'm looking at, and they're in the C drive, and the apps data folder, there's a 2 gig backup or something. It's just mind blowing to me. I don't know. Maybe somebody can enlighten me on this, but there's a program files folder for program files. And so I don't know who they think they are, but why is anybody installing their programs in the data folder? That's where Chrome is and all the data and everything that goes with it. It's like, why don't you, if you're not going to install the program files in the program files folder, why don't you just, why store them anywhere? Why don't you just install it right on their desktop? Why don't you just install everything right on the desk? I mean, why put it anywhere? If you could just put it anywhere you want, just put it anywhere. Who cares? There's no rules. It's complete anarchy, and it just makes me insane. And I don't know. I mean, so far Chrome seems to be kind of unique in this. You do see it in other things, but it just irritates me that they just run their files from wherever they want. And so, you know, it's like no structure for you. Goodbye. And of course, you know, this iTunes is ridiculous. These huge backups. So anyway, what I ended up doing was, she did have as per our conversation last time, she did have a nice, external hard drive type device, setting there near the computer she was backing stuff up to. And so I was able to make, good images of the drives stored on there, and then I, you know, kind of felt free to go nuts. And of course, so nice with Vista and on, because there actually was some function in Windows to resize those partitions. That was one of the things that that was long overdue, and I was so glad when they did introduce that in Vista. It's not perfect; it lacks a lot of features, but what it does do, it tends to do fairly well. And so what I did was, everything that was stored on a D drive, after I made images, I then copied everything off of that D partition onto the external hard drive, deleted that partition, expanded the C to cover the entire hard drive, and then started migrating those things back. I just think it's too bad. I think that we as techs would do that. We would have a partition for the OS, a partition for the data, and then, of course, we would just kind of monitor that and see that everything isn't, you know, it's not like 2 years later you're looking at it and you have a lot of weird stuff jamming up your C drive. You would kind of be more proactive about it. But, and I love the fact that Acer tried that, but every story we've ever heard, it's just been a disaster, because the real world, it just doesn't work that way. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. When you're looking for folders and files to find out sizes, is there a particular application that you use?
Yeah, Spacemonger.
Spacemonger?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that one.
That is, I'd have to get a link. That is a program that was kind of free, and then it kind of wasn't. And then I think that there were some weird things with the publisher. It's never been updated, and it's actually, I don't know. I'd have to find a legit place to link to it to download. But it's fantastic. It's a portable. Once again, I think it's supposed to run as a portable app. I know mine does. And yeah, it's wonderful. It's a very small little program. There's just an executable. You run it, and basically, it gives you a graphical representation of everything stored on the hard drive. And so, obviously, staring when you open up the C drive and you look at the file system, the tree, it doesn't give you any indication. And often, even if you try and sort by details, it doesn't give you much information, and so you lose a gig here, lose a gig there, and you're trying to track it down. You run this, and it might take a minute or two to run through the drive, and bam. And so if you have some giant large file, it's actually represented there. The larger the files, the larger the boxes in there. And so you can very quickly see where the space is going. You can very quickly see how much is being consumed by the recycle bin, the page file, and on and on and on. And from there, you can then kind of start dialing things back. For example, a couple weeks ago, I did have a customer that, same thing. Now, this laptop was just old, and so it has a small hard drive. But I could see where, this recycle bin doesn't need to be this big. Okay, so let's dial it back. Well, it doesn't. It didn't need to be. I don't know how many gigs it was, but it was. It's like just, she had crap in there from, she deleted like 2 years ago. Well, that's silly. You know what I mean? That's just the way it came. That's the way it's set up. So, you know, we can decrease that. I mean, this is an XP machine. We're just trying to get a few more months out of it. And so, we dial that back. I could see where the, also if there are, and actually that was really good because she had 5 gigs that were eaten up by a, you know, when you have a Garmin and they update, they download these enormous files. It's like a file. It's like 2 gigs. It's like, how did you ever download that successfully? How on earth did you ever download that successfully? That amazes me. And pass, you know, whatever checksum processor goes through. But And then it expands it, you know, almost like if you're unzipping it, into another file that's, you know, a half again as big. And Garmin, it never even thinks that maybe it should delete one or the other. And so, you know, she had 5 gigs eaten up with this ridiculous Garmin software update. So, once again, very, very easy to find in that that Spacemonger. There's a number of programs out there. I don't know if I wasn't looking at the chat if anybody threw any suggestions out. But that's, once again, that's the first one I came across. Matter of fact, I think that might have been a... That might have been a recommendation from very early on in Podnuts. Well,
there was one actually.
I
know
for a fact. I remember for a fact, Steve C talking about it, because there was a broken function in Spacemonger where you could actually click like one of the boxes to delete, and I think that it would delete the file, but the application would crash.
I thought it was a different one that they talked about.
I'm almost sure it was. Well, actually, I remember saying that, and I remember Spacemonger doing that, so maybe I put that together. But that actually does work now. You actually can delete from it, rescan. I'll find a good download for that.
I posted something in our chat and also in the chat in the chat room, but it looks like Spacemonger, the latest one, 2.11, was released September 8, 2006.
Yeah, it's very, very old. I almost get the sense it was made by a really grumpy old woman.
Oh, grumpy old woman.
I don't remember why I say that, but there was something that in my memory that she made something that satisfied her, and I don't know. And I think she got really mad and just said, well, nobody can have it. And I don't know. There was something weird there, but...
I've used Tree Size.
Yes, that is another.
That one, and that actually starts to support Windows 8 now. So that's always a good one. And then we had a chat room. They said that CCleaner will remove your Windows log files, which can be huge too.
Absolutely.
So if you're running out of space, that's always a good one too.
Absolutely. If space is an issue, CCleaner is usually, actually on just about every machine, CCleaner is usually one that I run. I like, and CCleaner has only gotten better. That thing has gotten so good and so powerful. It's always been awesome at scanning, finding the files. You can pick through, decide what you want deleted, not. But also, all of the start, there was always a nice startup program you could go through, enable, disable without actually going through into msconfig, which is great.
That's probably my most favorite.
Absolutely,
right there.
If you can avoid that. In recent versions, of course, it's been a little while now, but it actually breaks it down. So there are startup programs in your that just naturally start up with the machine. There are those that like kind of auto run, or I would say maybe with you know, your browsers and some of the others. So you can go through. It actually kind of breaks it down, and so. CCleaner is just fantastic. And of course, all the scanning the registry also that is still seems to be pretty successful. I've never had it break a machine.
Yeah. Nope, me neither. And I've run it on servers and the whole thing. So, well, cool. So I came across something, and this is now it's interesting. These two things are just kind of back to back. I've been talking with Cody Cooper, and you know, I've been looking at, you know, maybe, you know, there's always the dilemma of, do you rent or do you buy your own cable modem? You know, $8 a month, you can rent it, you know, through Comcast. I have Comcast. $8 a month, you can rent it. Or do you spend the, you know, $80, $90 for your own, where then, you know, after 10 months, your return on investments, you're already paid for. But then if it breaks, do you, you know, then they will fix it, as opposed to them saying it could be your cable modem, replace it. So you just kind of go. So Cody Cooper and I were talking about this, and he did a whole lot of research and found one called the Motorola Surfboard SB6141. And through podnuts.com/Amazon, it's right about $80. So he did some work on it and checked it out, and he went ahead and bought one. I said, I should get one too. I was, the day the Comcast came out, I was going to have my cable modem, completely forgot. They showed up and I was like, I hope you have a cable modem for me. So I bought one. Well, right on the foothills of that. So I put that in Monday, right on the foothills of that. Like I said, foothills, whatever it's called. Comcast customer surprised to learn a new router is also public hotspot. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but apparently what's happening is Comcast is taking their wire, your router. You know, sometimes you can have two wireless signals inside of your router.
Yeah.
One's yours, and the other one you can do whatever you want with it, except turn it off. They don't give you a way to turn it off. You have to actually call Comcast to turn it off. But what Comcast is doing for the benefit of you and for the benefit of all the other Comcast users, is they're turning on remotely, they're turning on that second wireless so you can have a hotspot. And as a Comcast provider, I can go to my next door neighbor, and if they're a Comcast provider, I can jump on their hotspot because Comcast has made it possible. So now if you own your own cable modem, ta-da, you don't have that.
I have Comcast, but it's not wireless. I mean, I don't have a wireless router.
Right. Mine came wireless. Now, I wasn't using it wireless, but that doesn't stop Comcast from turning it on because they can just remotely turn it on and configure it and make it a public hotspot. So my new one, yeah. And unless you call them to say turn it off, they will just turn it on. So it's definitely an opt out. But,
why would they do this? I mean, it's not. How do they discern whether it's just Comcast customers? Could anybody walking down your street connect to this public hotspot?
Well, no, I think what happens is it used to be like what AT&T used to do. You know, you used to go to Starbucks coffee, and unless you were an AT&T member, you know, you couldn't get on the AT&T network because you had your own AT&T username and password. I believe that's what they're doing here, is that if you're a Comcast provider, you can jump on a Comcast hotspot, and your credentials is your Comcast.
Yeah, because I got a thing from them, an email, and actually I did it. There's an app, but I never bothered to find out where all the hotspots were, but I can connect to them. But I never
Those hotspots you're connecting to are not Comcast putting a business hotspot. Those are other people's home routers.
Oh my gosh.
Now, they're saying it's not going to mess with your network. They're saying it's not going to mess with your bandwidth. And I'm saying that's a bunch of baloney.
Okay, so there actually is some authentication required. It's not like it's wide open for the whole public to jump onto.
I would assume so, because it's a Comcast, because that's why they're doing this, is because it's a Comcast benefit to Comcast employees. If you're, running through a neighborhood because your kids are playing football or your daughter's playing softball and you happen to be in a neighborhood and, hey, wait, I wish I had wireless.
You mean Comcast customers.
Right, as a Comcast customer. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I would have to know more about it. It sounds terrible. It sounds like an awful, awful idea from the end user standpoint. I mean, obviously, as a business, they're free to make all the bad. Well, obviously, they're free to make all the bad decisions they want. I don't know. I mean, I could kind of see this. If what I would want to hear is that it was highly throttled, that people can enjoy the benefit of having this locally, but it's not like they're going to get a really wide pipeline through my house. And I don't know. I mean, that would be my main issue right there. As long as they knew who was doing what through my modem, which it sounds like they do.
Right.
And it could be heavily throttled so that, if usage at my own home goes up, if it's getting maxed out somehow, I would expect that open one to be the one that gets that pipe gets closed up pretty good so that I'm not affected. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Isn't this a little too late? I mean, what are you going to connect to it that you need data for? I mean, what, your phone? Well, who's carrying a phone without data? I'm right. I mean, 6-7 years ago, when you had to go war driving, this would have been great. Of course, it was all open then, so who cares, right? I mean, what are you going to go up? Are you going to pull from somebody's house with a tablet and just sit there for a while? It doesn't even make sense.
Well, I mean, tablets are fairly inexpensive, and tablets with cellular reception are even more expensive. So, you have kids, or you have, people who just have a touch, or they just have a Android tablet that doesn't have any cellular. So, yeah, you could be pulling up in front of somebody. You could be driving through a neighborhood and pulling over and getting on somebody's wireless.
Right. Well, I can see the scenario where you would want to, because my kids both have tablets, and they're always wanting to tether off my phone or whatever. But I can also tell you that twice now I've had policemen stop at my house after 11 p.m. because somebody called in the plate from where I was sitting outside their house near a portal ingressing. Okay. Literally for less than 5 minutes. Okay. Less than 5 minutes. I've been outside a house. I've had the cops call on me three times, and twice they've come to the house. So, that's the problem that I see with this, is that, in today's world, you have somebody sitting outside, especially if you don't know about this, if you don't know that this is available off of your modem, and now you have random people stopping outside your house, I could see that becoming an issue.
Yeah, Tachos is saying that he's found that the 3G works faster. But it's to me, it's not a matter of speed. It's not a matter of whether it's going to be fast or not. It's a matter of Comcast turning on my cable modem to make it their hotspot.
It's a matter of right and wrong.
In this article from Ars Technica, it says, we encourage all subscribers to keep this feature enabled as it allows more people to enjoy the benefits of Xfinity Wi-Fi around their neighborhood. And then it goes on to say, the second network won't allow your primary connections down, slow your primary connection down, at least not much. The broadband connection to your home will be unaffected by the Xfinity Wi-Fi feature. Your in-home Wi-Fi, as well as Xfinity Wi-Fi, uses a shared spectrum. As with any shared medium, there will be some impact as more devices share Wi-Fi. And we have provisioned the Xfinity Wi-Fi feature to support robust usage. And therefore, we anticipate minimal impact to the in-home Wi-Fi network. So, okay. Like I said, you can sugarcoat it all you want, but you still have remotely turned on my wireless. So, my thought is, if you have a Comcast wireless router, and you either are or are not using it, you can call Comcast and have them turn this feature off. Or go out and buy your, just go out and buy your own modem.
Actually, that's how this conversation started. What is the price breakdown? What's the way to go here? I think you should always have your own. Let me back off that. Unless you're like the typical end user that doesn't know anything about anything and they need support, I think that you should own your own.
See, I had my own, but when I got this upgraded service from Comcast, I got the phone service, so it's everything in one.
Mm-hmm. Right. So. Well, yeah. So that is a problem if you do have phone service in them, because they come right off that cable modem. Yeah. So this surfboard modem, this is the Motorola surfboard SB6141. It's $80 on podnos.com/Amazon. So I was spending $8 a month on that. In 10 months, I've already paid it off.
Unless Comcast kept on charging you rental fees they did that
to
me.
I just turned in that modem yesterday, so I will keep an eye on it. And I did get an email saying minus $8.
I had it for 7 years, just realized they were charging me. They only went back for 1 year. They only reimbursed me for 1 year. I said, well, how do I know you weren't charging me all those other years I had it? It's awful. I mean, because my wife pays the bill. She don't know what to look at. My fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do have a problem with this. That what they're doing, that is not something that should be enabled by default without your knowledge. That's something that should be disabled and only enabled with your permission. It's kind of like buying a new car and a couple of years later finding that you have passengers in your trunk that was arranged by Ford without your knowing. As a convenience to the other Ford customers,
it's ride sharing.
Yeah,
big grandma.
As a convenience to other Ford customers, but you know what? Let them pay part of my bill.
Right.
Anyway,
preach it, Tim.
That's it. Oh, that's it. I'm putting my fist down. I tell you what, I do like owning my own equipment. I think there's something. I suppose there's something nice about having their equipment because. If there is an issue or something, I suppose that you'd be provided with. If you have a modem and it's older, and these things tend to degrade over time, a lot of times they're not just on or off; they do tend to kind of degrade over time. You wouldn't know that until you went out and plunked down, $80 of your own dollars and then actually replaced the device. But you know what? I've gone to my residential customers' houses, and they have these, like all-in-one type units from their provider. That it's the modem, it's the wireless router, and it acts as a switch. And you know what? I absolutely hate them because very often there's very little configuration in it. You're kind of a slave to it. If there's a problem with it, you have to you're in tech support for an hour trying to convince them that there's a problem with it. You know what I'm saying? And it's kind of like...
Oh, I totally know what you're saying.
And it's kind of...
That's why I'm laughing.
It's kind of like, if you... Given the choice, wouldn't you rather just have your own router than have to deal with this with these people? And I feel the modem's the same way. I kind of like having my own equipment. I'm in charge. If I want to replace it, I'll go replace it. If I feel like it's bogging down, well, I'll go buy a new one and try it out. It's... whatever it costs me to replace it, it's pennies on the dollar compared to the frustration that I'm going to have on the phone with these people... letting them, you know, quote unquote, check it out and try and decide what the problem is. And, you know, so I feel about the modem the same way I feel about the router. If you can own it yourself, you can set it up the way you want yourself. And ultimately, it's not that much money. I feel like it's a small price to pay for, you know, being able to make your own decisions independently. And that's all. That's kind of how I feel about that. That's the way I approached it. So.
No, I totally agree.
There you go.
See, I'm on a Comcast deals, and it's going to be up, I don't know, April, March. And
well, but I think even if you're on your own deal, other than the fact that you have phone, other than the fact that you have phone integrated, you can still get your own.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Modem, mm-hmm. Yeah. So don't think that. I mean, listeners, don't think that even if you're tied into, you know, what do they call it, the triple play bundle or things like that, you can still get your own modem.
Right. But you know, I'm thinking about dropping the. Move the phone somewhere else, or I'm not sure what we're going to do. But I do like their phone service. I do like Comcast's phone service. It's pretty cool when you're watching TV, you get a phone call, pops up on the TV, you know, from Comcast. So who's calling you?
Oh, that's new. That was there when I had phone.
Yeah.
But, one of the things that I just heard yesterday, my phone went all ablaze, is that there are talks of bringing Google Fiber over here.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I'll keep you updated when I get a gig to the desktop. So then I'll share my network with people, because then you aren't going to take my band. That's my bits. That's my bandwidth.
Wow, that should be a t-shirt.
Hey, before we go off, can I talk about that? You know, my search for cell phone.
I got more things to talk about.
You know, like I'm looking for a different my cell phone plan. That's going to be up in May with Verizon, and I don't want to pay $70-$80 anymore. And
cheapskate.
I am. I mean, I'm. At that senior citizen's age, and you know, I'm going to be retiring soon, and it's going to be really cheap. But anyway, so I'm looking at Virgin Mobile. They have some, you know, fairly good deals, and they're pretty good up in my area. But I don't know if somebody told me about this or I came across it. There's this company called Republic Wireless. Yeah, I got a chat room there, and they have four plans for their service. But the caveat is they only have one phone. It's a Moto X. And it's called a hybrid system where they work on wireless and, you know, cell phone towers. And I think they use Sprint too. But you can get a $10 plan of where, and the phone works, but it's only going to work on wireless. So that's how you get your data. Then they have what's the next plan up? $15 for cell phone to get your calls on there. Then they have a 3G plan and a 4G. And the 4G is $40. I mean, how can you not beat that? But like I said, but the only bad thing is you have that, just the one phone. But it's a decent phone though.
So you want to keep Comcast wireless hotspots on, so you can only pay $5.
Nah, but I would do the 4G.
Yeah, it looks like $5 is just wireless, like you said. $10 a month is the wireless, and then unlimited talk and text wireless, unlimited calling on wireless. So it looks like. I don't know how they're doing.
No, I think that one's on the cell. Look at it real carefully.
Oh yeah, you're right. Cell, and then but it's not 3G or 4G. Those are the $25 and $40 plans. So,
but your data is still going to come off wireless.
Oh, got it.
And then when you go to the next plan, it's 3G, which you'll get 3G speeds for data off the cell and your wireless. But and then you have the next plan is 4G. Unlimited. Well, I think it might tether you or throttle you back after five gigabytes. But still, for $40, that's remarkably cheap. And if you go on YouTube, check out the reviews on Republic Wireless. I haven't seen anything negative about it. So, but I'm not saying I'm going to do it. But the only bad thing is the phone is $300. So
that's what I was just going to say. It looks like you have to buy the phone flat out $300, but then it's $40 a month after that.
That's pretty
cheap. at the most, which it is pretty cheap. And this would have been I would have thought about maybe doing this before I got my kids their phones. But
I mean, is Sprint pretty good in your area?
I don't know. There is a if you go to on the webpage in the drop down of is Republic right for me, there is a coverage check. You throw in your zip code, and my zip code came back with what does it say? I put in my zip code, hit check, and it says, "Sweet, we have great coverage for you in zip code area."
Said the same thing for me.
So I don't know if that's great coverage.
Well, if they're using Sprint, and I know Sprint is
coverage. No, we do have Sprint in this area as well.
But then, you know, looking at Virgin Mobile, you know, I can get I can get a similar phone to what I have now for $100. It's the LG Optima F3, I think, or Optimus F3. The only bad thing is that similar specs, except for its onboard storage, is like a gigabyte and a half or maybe two, which is, you know, going from 16. That's not great. No. I just don't want to spend maybe up to $200 on a phone. But there's another thing in the back of my mind. If I stay with Verizon, I can get, you know, one of the latest and greatest, but then you're going to be tied in two more years for another subsidized phone, and I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. But if you had $4.5 million lying around, you could buy that Moto X and not even worry about it.
I think the Mega Millions or somebody won it.
No. Well, the reason I said $4.5 million is because Ireland paid Microsoft $4.5 million to extend Windows XP support.
Are you serious?
I am completely serious. The Irish government didn't have time. They're running out of time. They don't have enough time to do Windows 7 deployment. So they're going to pay $4.5 million to Microsoft for Windows 7, so Windows XP support. So,
but is it just for them?
Just for them. Originally, Microsoft asked for $19.4 million, and they came to an agreement at $4.5 million. Wow. $19.4 million to extend Windows XP support. If that's not Microsoft just sticking it to you.
It doesn't bother me. They've had plenty of warning. That's the way governments work. They wait till 2 months before. Well, we're out of time. It's like, you know what? You've had 17 years of time to figure this. How long has XP been around? It's been forever. I mean, this isn't a surprise. The government drags its knuckles just trying to, you know, get anything done. Come on, give me a break.
But that only gives them a year. So they get 12 months support for that. And I don't even know if that includes call-in support. It's a $200 per call-in session when you have to get Microsoft on the line on top of the $4.5 million.
Hmm.
So I decided to throw that out there. I thought it was interesting.
It is. No, it proves that nothing is ever truly end of life. You know, all it takes is money.
That's right. The zombie apocalypse, well, because it's going to be rich, mainly rich people. Not. That's going downhill really fast. Okay, switching subjects. Well, I had something really, really odd happen to me yesterday. I was called into a site that they. This is all the only notice I had was this kind of came through third party through another a friend of mine. He said, "Hey, he's in Hawaii and wanted to know if I could handle a job for him." Sure, not a problem. The security card computer, which is Windows XP. So when you get a badge, sometimes the badge, Mitch, you probably have these, the badge and your picture ID are all on one. And it's also a card. It's also a fob. The machine that handles that controller, no internet connection. Nobody knew what was going on. So I got there and took a look at that and noticed right off the bat. So Windows XP Home, the lights for the icons, you know, the network traffic wasn't doing anything. I couldn't open up the network control panel. They didn't know the username and password to log into the machine, so they said, let's not reboot it. And the little Linksys 5-port wireless or 5-port network switch wasn't working right. So I power cycled the network switch and nothing. And then I went ahead and was messing with it. What it ended up coming out to be is hooked my laptop up to the DSL router as a Quest DSL modem. Power cycled the DSL router. I got an IP address and then the router locked up. Thought that was weird. Did it again. Router locked up. Soon as I unplugged the router from once the router's unplugged from the little workgroup switch, I reset the workgroup switch. Just, you know, power cycled. It's just a dummy switch. Light started blinking on the switch. Signal started to go. Now, it would only go for so long before the computer would air out again. And the reason it would air out is because now the computer doesn't have an IP address. So, gave the computer a static IP address. Everything worked fine. Everybody's very happy with this. But what was really interesting about this is that the DSL router was throwing errors. It would reboot. It would pretend like it's going to work. It would give out IP addresses. And then randomly, it would just lock up. And it would either lock up with all the lights off or some of the lights on. There was no pattern to it. It would hard lock. In the process of hard locking, it was throwing bad packets, and so it was causing issues across the network. which I had never come across that before. It was the weirdest thing, called tech support for Quest. The only reason they had this, they couldn't help me out too much because I didn't have a lot of the information, but the only reason they had this externally facing was because at one point, one of their other techs was remoting into the computer from the outside to do any updates. But now that tech's no longer there. And being a Windows XP machine, if they're going to keep using it, which it sounds like they are, it sounds like they're going to go ahead and probably get rid of that DSL connection, because anytime they need to make any changes, they go right to the computer themselves. So being an XP machine, I said, that's probably okay then, because it's not going to be on the network. But I don't know if you guys have ever come across with that before, but I thought that was the weirdest thing.
Yeah, I don't think so. That is strange. I don't remember having that. Weird.
But it's always, I always like to bring up some of those weird things because, you know, I know when I'm listening to you guys or other podcasts, and if something happens, I always kind of remember, oh, wait, I wonder if it's this. Like, you never think about that, but you kind of, you know, it kind of brings up some ideas. And so if somebody's having issues where things are just locking up, it's a DSL router. I mean, that was kind of the furthest thing from my mind was it's the DSL router's problem. You know, I did not hard reset the router because I had no idea what the configurations were other than the fact that I knew it was a 192.168.1.1. I didn't know any of the port forwarding, none of that. So I didn't feel comfortable hard resetting it, which I was afraid their Quest tech support was going to have me do that.
But, see, in those DSL routers, you have to have the password and all that in there, don't you? You know, the
right, and there was customer, no documentation.
I did a job on that, and the way I was going to do it, they wanted wireless, so they got a wireless a router, and they had the DSL. But I wanted to bridge it, try to do it the right way, you know, just so the router's doing everything. And, of course, I reset the DSL router, and all the passwords they gave me, they were all wrong. But long story short, I didn't have to do that. I could do, like what you said, just make sure the wireless router's in a different scope than what, you know, what the DSL was. And actually, that's what they told me too, when I called them up, the Verizon. So it was all wasted time.
Yeah.
But everybody's telling me, you know, you want to put it in bridge mode, which you really don't have to. So.
Right. Well, sometimes you can't put it in bridge mode. I know Comcast doesn't allow some of their stuff to go in bridge mode, but they can't, but you can put it in a DMZ. So,
well, this was DSL. So, I could have. The thing was there to do it, but I didn't have to. So.
Well, I know on a Comcast, so I have Comcast Business for a couple of my clients, and some of them are Comcast Business with a static IP address, and some of them are Comcast Business with a dynamic IP address. Static IP address, you can put it's got to be something that they do. They say they don't, but this has to be something that they do, that they will allow you to put the computer, the router in bridge mode, so that way all the data gets passed through, and then I can filter it via my, you know, enterprise firewall. Mm-hmm. As opposed to having to open a port on my firewall, then turn on having to open a port up on the router. One of my clients was having an issue with voice over IP. We ended up putting the router, because we could not go bridge mode, we ended up putting the firewall in the DMZ on the Comcast router, and then things worked properly.
Mm-hmm. See, go ahead.
Oh, but without doing that, so essentially it's not bridge mode, even though I'm getting the same results. I'm passing all the data unfiltered through the Comcast router and modem, and it's going straight to the firewall.
See, Martin, you are our in-house network engineer. No, I'm serious. You know all that. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's just, I just ran into that, and I don't, when I called up Comcast regarding why they couldn't do it on a dynamic IP address, they said, oh, we can't do that. But I know they can, because on a static IP address, another customer, they can totally do it.
I think, well, they charge you extra, don't they? I think
Yeah. And so you get a little more. It's a little more benefits. You know, it's right. First class versus coach.
Right.
You get free champagne in first class. In coach, you get a bag of nuts. I'm just saying. All right. So, anything else coming up this week for you guys? Hey,
yeah, real quick. Are you up on this 0-day patch for IE10 that Microsoft has released?
They just released it?
It's even released as a patch. I think it's like a fix-it tool right now.
Oh, really?
I just started looking at this earlier, and I really didn't get through it. And actually, reading through it, I don't even understand half of this. Maybe it's a bad article. Maybe I'm just distracted. I've read... that's why I'm kind of not up on this, but the part that that does strike me is, and that I actually understand, is The malware changes the host files on affected machines and adds several secure domains for French aerospace company. Well, actually, I don't know what the... But yeah, it messes with the host file. It looks like Java somehow installed, and it looks like kind of a big deal. So the threat out there, I haven't done any more research other than just to say that that does exist and it might be something to take a look at. I just wonder if you guys had seen anything about that.
No, I have not. I have not. I do see, you know, I just Googled zero-day IE10, and I do see a lot of stuff from Neowin, Ars Technica. And, you know, you're going to get stuff from, you know, from a couple days ago all the way to 13th. Here's someone from Symantec that is from today. So, and today being the 20th. But yeah, so if you guys have any of that, definitely go out and check it. I hope, you know, Microsoft has never been great about putting out out of patch cycle stuff, so we don't know. But if you are listening to this and you haven't patched your IE10, check it out. It looks like there is a couple fix-its out there. So, you know, worst thing is you already have it fixed and you run the 0-day, you run the patch and it says, okay, it runs again. It doesn't hurt to run it twice. But actually, it looks like this came out today, Threat Post. Here's one Threat Post that Microsoft released a fix-it tool as a temporary mitigation for a 0-day vulnerability in Internet Explorer. Yep. Okay, so this is the link that I have right here.
Anyway. Without crossing the line into FUD, I'm not sure exactly what we're dealing with. Just wondering if you guys have seen anything, but it looks like it could be something that maybe is worth taking a look at here.
Okay. We'll definitely keep our eyes on it. And we'll be talking... Our Geekster fiscal week will be a little shorter.
Yeah, we'll be back in 5 days.
Yeah.
Or whenever they come, they tell me to come down here and just sit.
That's right.
I don't know what day it is. You're like, when my phone rings and I see your little picture, I know it's time to go downstairs and sit in my chair.
Nice. I'm going to call you more often. You're going to be sitting there. What's going on?
Oh gosh!
Right. Well, I mentioned podnest.com/Amazon a couple times during the podcast, especially for the Motorola router. So, if you guys are surfing on Amazon and you want to help, support the Podnuts network, podnest.com/Amazon, we get a little money comes back to that. And you know, if you guys are also very interested in, you know, how can I not just support the network with Amazon and for other products that we have, you know, if you go to podnest.com and there is a donate button. You guys, if you have some extra change, you know, $2, $10 a month, and you want to donate to Podnuts, that'd be nice. That helps with some of the hosting, helps with some of the bills. That just, you know, makes Podnuts run. And I know I give a little bit back to the network, I don't see any of it, but it goes to help out, you know, just the network run smooth and provide some of that stuff. So I want to, you know, thank you guys for anybody who is, you know, who does use podnuts.com/Amazon and any of the other affiliate links and gives a little bit of money, either one time or monthly, from me to you guys. I definitely want to thank you guys for that. Much appreciated for that.
Don't forget the merch. I mean, there's shirts and hats and am I looking at a tie now? Podnuts tie, a necktie now? I'm seeing all kinds of cool stuff. I mean, if you want to like donate, nobody's stopping you. But yeah, man, but expect something in return. Send your money. Get some of the. There's some great stuff here, so check that out too. Don't look that over. There's some great t-shirts and hats and whatnot.
Definitely. Tim, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can do that?
My wife usually just grabs my ponytail, but I suggest my listeners. We go to I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+. I'm in like Tim.
What's that? Virtual ponytail.
Grab my virtual ponytail. Wow. Now that there's $1 million somewhere in the middle of that. I don't think I can continue. That's a.
Sorry. I will come.
Oh my gosh! I'm Tim Bauermeister from the G+. I'm in like Tim in the Podnuts forums. You can email me. I am tim@realpcrepair.com.
Nice. Hey, Mitch, we haven't received any voicemails or emails lately. What's up with that?
We were doing good for a while there. We had a few. Nothing in a while, but you can send us a voicemail at 7076-PODNUT. You can catch me on Mitch Heyman right here on Google+, or geeksters@podnuts.com, or geektalkwithmitch@gmail.com.
Nice.
I had that for years. I just haven't been using it. I will be.
Maybe we should bring it back.
Yeah, it's still there. I logged in the other day.
Nice. Nice. Well, I'm Martin Obando. You can get me at, I didn't even have my lower third up. I'm sorry. ObandoComputing.com. So Martin at ObandoComputing.com. You can check me out there. I'm Masskill in the forums. I'm Masskill in this. Sometimes I've been noticing that people refer to me as Martin Rambo Obando. If you listen to other Podnuts, that's me. Any other Podnut shows, that's me. That's from Cody Cooper. Gave me that nickname. So I'm debating whether or not I should change all my Masskill to Rambo, but I figured, eh. So I'm either Masskill or Rambo, depending on what shows you listen to.
But so those are great. That's a great nickname. That's a great name, well, man. I mean, they're like really, you know, like, well, really tough guy kind of stuff. I mean, Masskill is like.
Well, but it's not. See, Masskill is not mess. Anyways, we'll talk about that.
It later. Should be.
Well, it's not though. It's a nice one.
Maybe anyways, someday.
So, guys, that's it. I think we're gonna put 107 in the bag and have a great shorter fiscal week. This next time, and we'll catch you everybody on Tuesday. All right. Thanks, guys.